Welcome to Pulse Carbon Radio. Usually at this time, you'd be listening to the Farm and Food Shed Report with host Robin Carpenter. Robin has graciously given us her time slot so we can go into a little more depth on the subject of aging and conscious elderhood. We have four dynamic and vital elders as our guests today. Let me introduce first Kurt A. Kowald.
Yes.
Who is a Unitarian Universalist community minister in Oakland, climate, racial, and social justice activist, served in seven Unitarian Universalist congregations, including three community ministries. One was with the homeless in the Tenderloin District of San Francisco, and one was as seminary faculty in the Graduate Theological Union in Berkeley. Active in showing up for racial justice, organizing in white communities in support of the movement for black lives, in interfaith work for low-wage workers, as well as in dialogue groups with conscious elders in Sebastopol. He's ecstatic that he will be a grandfather in October. Yeah. How old are you, Kurt?
I'm 73.
Well, welcome to Post Carbon Radio. And also in the studio is Constance Washburn. Constance attended the founding session of the Conscious Elders Network in 2014. She is a facilitator of Joanna Macy's work that reconnects, and she's worked she worked at MALT for many years as the education director and is resident of the San Geronimo Valley. Well, welcome, Constance.
Thank you.
And on the telephone, we have John Sorensen, founder of the Conscious Elder Network, formed in 2014. John has had 40-plus years of engineering design, corporate management, and entrepreneurial experience. He now uses this experience to fulfill his calling as an environmental activist and community organizer in transforming our culture to one that encompasses the wisdom and caring of the conscious elder. Welcome to Post Carbon Radio, John. Are you with us, John? Hi, John.
Sorry.
Thank you.
Welcome to Post Carbon Radio. Where are you? Where are we calling you at today?
I live in Truckee, California, just north of Lake Tahoe.
Okay. And how old are you, John?
I'm 76.
76. Okay. Constance, I forgot to ask you.
How old are you? I will be 65 in 2 weeks.
Oh, you're a baby elder. Okay.
I'm an elder in training.
There you go. That's what I call myself, too. Okay. And on the other line, we have David Lucky Goff in Sebastopol. He and Alexander Hart wrote a book. Let's see, I've got it here. They're authors of The Age of Actualization, a handbook for growing an elder culture. He has a background in transpersonal psychology, and Alexandra and David, we call David Lucky because they started an elder salon in Sebastopol 6 years ago that meets monthly. And together they host another radio show, Growing an Elder Culture, a two-hour radio show that airs monthly from Sebastopol on various elder topics and issues. Alexandra just had a double knee replacement, so she I think she has a doctor appointment today and won't be joining us, but she's very instrumental in our elder movement. David is, we call David Lucky. He's a prolific writer. He writes a blog called The Slow Lane on his observations on the aging process. In 2003, David had a brain aneurysm as a result of his stroke and the onset of a rare brain syndrome. He nearly died and ended up permanently disabled. This experience has had a transformational effect on David, which made him lucky and cued him into how radically connected all things are. Welcome to Post Carbon Radio, Lucky.
Hi, Bing. Hi, Constance.
Hi, Lucky.
Great. Let me just give a little introduction. So we're living in the longevity revolution. People are living 20 to 30 years beyond the age of retirement. Pre-boomers born in the 1930s to 1944 and baby boomers born between 1945 and 1964 are becoming a demographic force as a majority of an aging population. From these individuals is arising a growing movement of conscious elders that will change the stereotypes of older people. More and more aging people want their retirement years to be a time of growth, intellectually, emotionally, and spiritually. Elders ripen into wisdom and mellow into caring and compassion. In contrast, oldsters see their lives as behind them, reveling only in their lives in what they have already done and accomplished. Elders see their lives as enriched and enriching right to the end. Elders are coming together to nurture each other, raise consciousness, and create community. By sharing and comparing their aging experiences, they enrich each other. They are sharing perspectives and discovering their gifts. They discuss what they want and need in their future and explore their courses of action and attitudes as they progress into and through their older years. What will be their role in society and community on a threatened planet that faces the urgency of ecological crises? What have their generational contributions been, and what is left undone? What are their mistakes and triumphs, and what can we learn and offer to others? So those are some of the questions we'll be dealing with today's show. And I thought we'd just start off the discussion with, let's talk about what we mean by elders, because I think elders are mostly use the term in indigenous cultures and traditional cultures. They might have had rites of passage that defined an area when a person reached, became an elder, and they were honored and respected. So let's contrast our culture. Would you like to kick off our discussion, Constance?
Sure. I have been working on the Conscious Elders Network Foundation course, and being a elder in training, I've been doing a lot of reading and exploration about just that question: what does it mean to be an elder? And there's lots of literature out there, and people are starting to talk about that question, but I think the thing that most intrigued me was the role of as an elder as an unparalleled time of growth, of inner awareness building and investigation. And that, as Salman Schachter Shalomi says, we wouldn't have been put on this planet with all this time to do that if there wasn't a purpose for it. So what is the purpose of that, this time in our lives to be reflective and go through the wisdom we've gained and the awareness we've gained? And our brains actually change at this time to be able to take in the big picture, to be take in a longer length of time. And adults and youth are like, okay, I got to do it now. I got to make the money. I got to raise my kids. I got to get the job. And as an elder, we have a larger time frame so we can think about the future generations. And that's so important because we as a culture are needing so much what elders have to bring. We're a culture that's so youth-oriented and immediate gratification-oriented and me-oriented, that if we're going to survive on this planet and evolve to a stage where we take into consideration the future generations and the needs of all species, we need that bigger perspective. And that's what elders can bring.
Kurt, would you like to chime in?
Yeah, actually, I want to second the Schachter Shalomi quote, because Carl Jung prior to Reb Zalman had a statement that really impacted me and actually began me on my journey when I was 51 into looking into the needs of elders. I was an intern minister in Walnut Creek, and I was facing congregants who were saying in their 70s and 80s that they were very frustrated, and because they couldn't do the things that they had done before. They couldn't give themselves to the particular kind of work that they had done before. And what I really sensed beneath that was some kind of a despair about who they were feeling themselves to be. So a couple of things became clear, that there was some kind of ageism at work, and also that there was something beyond that that they knew was there. And then I found this quote by Carl Jung, and that mirrors what Reb Zalman said. He said, "A human being would certainly not grow to be 70 or 80 years old if this longevity had no meaning for the species to which they belong." And that statement was enough to propel these folks into a really deep search around what eldering could offer them. And I think the thing for me that I'll say right now, so that we can have our other two guests to participate, but the thing for me that's critically important around what we call conscious eldering is that we're talking about intention, that people come into these elder years and they develop or find in themselves, they develop an intention to actually live into these moments, to engage their lives in the process of growing older, to learn to be open to the natural unfolding of critical psychological and spiritual existential capacities that hasn't been available to them as a younger person, at least in not such powerful ways. And so that's an initial statement at this point around what I believe. But I think intention is critically important here.
Yeah.
Next, I'd like to ask Lucky, you've coined a term called grand adolescence. I think it's appropriate to talk about that right now. What do you mean by that term, grand adolescence, Lucky?
I'd be glad to speak to that, Bing. But before I do, I just want to add my two cents about elders. I think what both Constance and Kurt have said is really important. And I think it's for the benefit of making the distinction between elders and what I call merely older people. Elders have traditionally been very role-bound in that it's a religious word, actually. Elder comes from religious traditions. So, in almost every case, the elder had the role of either maintaining the traditions of a particular religion or of a particular indigenous culture. And that distinguished them in their time. Now, we have an opportunity to live anywhere from 30 to 33% of the time beyond the roles. So the new elder is someone who actually doesn't have a particular role to fulfill and thereby is free, more free than anyone has been in the past. So, you know, what Jung and what Rabbi Zalman Schachter were referring to is a new phenomena. This has only been around for the last 30 or 40 years. And we're heading into a time where a historical time, an evolutionary time, where elders have not really existed free of roles and rules and all the expectations that our cultures tend to heap on us. So that provides us an opportunity to actually go pretty much like Star Trek says, where no one has gone before. And in certain ways, I think Kurt and Constance are highlighting the wonderful opportunity that exists for people now to be in a place that is really unique and different from everything that has preceded. And therefore, to make a contribution like none other. So that's exciting. My use of the word grandiosus was to begin to try to give expression to a time, a very difficult time for most people, making a transition from adulthood to elderhood, and making a transition from playing a very rule-bound place in our culture, mostly having to do with production, either family or economic or both, and making this transition to the freedom that rules in the latter part of life now is actually fairly arduous. Seems easy, but it means letting go of what one has been. And so Grand Lessons is really an opportunity for me to express that there's a period of adjustment, a very difficult period for many people, especially starts around retirement age and then goes for making up from anywhere to 40 or 20 years of time of letting go of roles, letting go of influence, letting go of being the most significant person in the family. There are a host of difficulties that often entails, as is frequently pointed out by the insurance industry and the banking industry and the financial people, is a time of diminishment. Said everybody knows this happening. What they don't know is this actually begins the process of setting up one for radical new freedom and a radical new opportunity. So we move from being economically productive to being more productive in the sense of growing ourselves, growing our place in the world, and growing the opportunity to actually be somebody that can make a difference. So that's a long way of saying what grandiosus is. I hope that explains it.
Thank you, Lucky. grandiosus, it really struck me that, like adolescence, we really are going into a new phase, and it's kind of uncharted territory. That's why I have been for a couple years now getting into rubbing shoulders with other elders and sharing our experiences and perspectives. I'd like to bring John Sorensen into our conversation. You founded, why did you found the Conscious Elders Network, John, and what is its mission?
Well, thank you. I guess I would pick up on what Lucky just talked about. I ran a business for several years. I worried at the very end of that of what if I give this up, what am I going to do? And it was such a strong part of my life that I was so embedded in. And I had no idea. I knew it was time to move on, but I was really concerned that I had no plan. And so anyway, I went through kind of a letting go grieving process, if you will, of, okay, I'm not going to be working in the business world anymore. I was very happy to not have the worries of that, but I needed to find something new. And through a process of my own, I don't know, perhaps psychological healing, perhaps, of some old wounds and looking ahead and realizing how fortunate I've been in being able to live in this wonderful country of ours, so fortunate for all the opportunities and experiences I was given, it it came to me that I really wanted to spend the rest of my time giving back in some meaningful way. And so then the question became, what would that be? And so I started off doing some consulting, you know, pro bono type consulting to small startups to help them get started with their making, you know, people, young people, old people, people with dreams of something that they could do, either to make money or to give back in some way, but not really knowing how to make it viable in a sense of longevity and financially stable, that kind of thing. I soon discovered, and I had a bunch of those going on, I soon discovered that although this was easy for me and it was helpful for them, it was not fulfilling. I needed to find something else. And I kept exploring, and this whole realization came that we are pioneering a new growing phase of life, of living a lot longer past the typical retirement age, and many of us perhaps are feeling that we don't want to do what our culture thinks we should do, which is go to some retirement community and do crafts and shuffleboard and bingo and that sort of thing. We really want to use the energy and the skills and the experiences, and I would say the wisdom that we've gained over the years. And so one thing led to another. And then the other thing I would put on top of that is I've spent my most of my life paying a lot of attention to the political scene in our country and realizing, and as many of us do, that we could do so much better as a nation. We have, you know, in terms of the world, we are the wealthiest country in the world. We are the one with the best education system, even though we complain about it. We have such opportunity here, and yet we really don't take advantage of that. And so that all came together, saying there are elders out there with wisdom, time, experience, and resources to work with. We can change this culture. We can change this society if we could get our act together and work as one. And so this was kind of a vague dream, I'd call it a dream. Actually, it came to me in a vision quest of this is what I'm to do. And so I pulled together a small circle of folks to say, you know, could we pull together the elders of our country, those who see this and see that we could do better, we could change this society if we put our energies to it. Could we do this? They all gave me this saying, yes, we could do that. And yes, that could be a very exciting thing for us. It's certainly a big enough goal, and it's one that's not, we're not going to get it done in our lifetime, but that's okay. We can think about it that we're starting to build a cathedral. And so that became our sort of one of our metaphors. And so we launched this 2 years ago, and Constance was there when she mentioned that earlier. And so that's what we're doing. We've launched this. We are looking at, and also I think Kurt mentioned this too, and maybe Lucky too. We've never been there before. We've stepped across a threshold into the forest, if you will. We're off the normal path, and we're exploring together and putting this together as we go here. And so, anyway, that's how it got started. Thank you.
This is Polk Carbon Radio. Again, this is a two-hour special on aging and conscious elderhood. Our guests are Kurt Kuwald, a Unitarian Universalist community minister, Constance Washburn, a facilitator of Joanna Macy's work that reconnects, and John Sorensen, founder of the Conscious Elder Network, and David Lucky Goff, who has written with Alexandra Hart, The Age of Actualization, a handbook for growing an elder culture. I think, Kurt, you had a quote you'd like to...
Yeah, well, I was actually... Constance and I were kind of connecting here around some possibilities around the terrain that elders actually live in, some of which is supported by previous traditional work, and some of it is brand new. And the quote that I'm thinking down that road of this newness and this unknownness that we're entering into comes from Malcolm Cowley, who's a novelist, a poet, and a literary critic. He said, and I'm paraphrasing here, he said, "To enter the country of old age is an entirely new experience, different from what anyone supposes it to be. No one knows that country until they have lived in it and until they have taken out citizenship papers within its terrain." So what Cowley was highlighting is something I think that many of us are experiencing in one part of this, and that is this unknownness. You know, we don't know what we're really moving into at this time in the 21st century at this age. So, but I think that Constance had some other points.
Just because of the reading that I've been doing and beginning to understand that there are models for being an elder in different cultures than ours. And part of why I think it's so unknown for us is because we haven't lived in a culture with elders in place doing what elders are meant to do. They've been pushed to the side, into the nursing home, off on their own. So we haven't lived with what those models of elder could be. And I mean, these are some traditional roles, and the mentor, the passing on the wisdom and initiating adolescence, the mediators, the people who resolve conflicts, the monitors, the grandma on the end of the block who's keeping her eye on everybody, that person who is also keeping an eye on government and public officials, the storytellers, the visionaries who have time to help vision a better future and inspire people and motivate people, the nurturers, the caretakers of the kids and the planet, those roles, and the ones for being a model of what it means to be an elder, so that we, coming up as elders in training, our adults, can follow those models that are there, but we haven't had them. So it feels like it's totally new territory. So one of the things that I've been doing on the work that reconnects retreats with the elders is they all ask, well, what does it mean to be elder? What is it? And so giving some of these contexts has been really helpful. And the other is really, what's the task of an elder? And this is what we were talking about before. It's being able to deal with and look at not only our own personal decline and come to grips with our, I want to say immortality, but really it's our grips with our mortality, which is embedded in immortality. But how do we come to grips coming to grips with that individually to help our culture come to grips with the fact that it is also in decline? You know, empire is collapsing right now. And how do we deal with that emotionally? And elders can help with that. How can elders help us as a culture move away from our preoccupation with our personal ambitions and gaining stuff, which is what we do as youth and adults? So elders' task is to really let go of that stuff, let go of the personal ambition and the acquisition of stuff, and move into working for the whole and letting go of things. And how can we model that for the whole culture? Because the whole culture's got to let go of that. We've got to let go of that grabbing for power and that accumulation of stuff. And reclaiming wonder. I mean, the grandma's hanging. I was the other day being surrogate grandma to two neighborhood kids, and we went for a creek walk, and it was just so much fun to hang out with little kids and go, wow, look what's under that rock, and woo, this is cool. Reclaiming wonder and allowing others to reclaim that with you. That's one of the tasks of an elder. And to just bring the wisdom of the ages and into the present so that we can move forward in a way that's going to be healthy for all species. That was a bit of a rant, but I think that there are some roles and tasks out there that we can embrace and not have to make it up.
You mentioned being a surrogate grandparent.
Yeah.
In fact, I wrote an article for The Light, and Tess Elliott, the editor there, mentioned that she would really like to have a surrogate grandparents because her parents and her husband's aren't in the area.
Mm-hmm.
So I think maybe that's an immediate task that elders could do.
Yeah.
Especially if you want to get in contact with kids again.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Oh, it's yeah. So much fun.
Yeah. Okay. I'd like to go to Lucky now. You wrote a book with Alexandra Hart, The Age of Actualization, a handbook for growing elder culture. We've been talking a little bit about it, but why grow an elder culture, and what are the topics that you speak about on your radio show?
It runs the gamut from death to what it is we can do with this time between here and there. There are many things. As, you know, I think you wanted to have us do a more of a roundtable discussion. And I wanted to add to something that I just heard Constance say. I want to underscore it, if I can, for a moment. I just want to say that Constance really did a good job of enumerating all the traditional roles that elders have played. And I want to add to it by saying we're actually in a new era, an evolutionary era, I call it, where in addition to those traditional roles, which is so important, there is a role which I don't have a name for, but I think it has to do with addressing the unknown. There's the known wisdom of all of our traditions, which accounts for how we got here and maybe how to persevere into the future. But there is also the unknown wisdom that I think those elders who actually break through beyond the roles and begin to face their inner flowering, what then I call the age of actualization, we're beginning to see old people who actually have learned that they don't know so much. And because they've realized that despite all their knowing, it has led them to really unknowing, they're now beginning to be available to the unknown, beginning to see into a future, which by and large is not available to be seen if one only looks back into what traditions. So we're in a new stage, and something new is coming through. And it's coming through, oddly enough, through the old people. I think we've lived in a culture that has believed that newness only comes from the young. But in this case, it's the old who are really new. And because they are new, they're bringing something forward that could change everything because they themselves realize their own newness and realize that they want to try to actualize their newness for everybody's sake. So one of the beautiful things, which I'm sure is what is motivating everybody on this panel and the two of you who are hosting this event, is a desire to give something back to the community to enable us as a species to learn to live within the niche that is really a miracle.
Thank you, Lucky.
That's all I would say for now.
Thank you. John, I know that the Conscious Elder Network is planning a national gathering in September. Would you like to tell us a little bit about that?
Sure. Thank you. Yes, we had a national, our first gathering in 2014 when 47 of us met in Burlingame to really launch a Conscious Elders Network, and that was before we had a name for it. The realization is that when we actually get together physically, spend three full days with each other, a lot happens in addition to the bonding and discussion that go on in a very deep way. We get a bolt of lightning goes through us all to get out there and really take this to, you know, in other words, we really get jacked up to go forward. The leadership of our organization really came from that meeting we had in 2014, and we were at a place where we have so many different projects that are coming, and so many people are signing up to say, I want to be a part of what you're doing, that we need a whole new cadre of facilitator leaders, if you will, and that will come from this gathering we're going to do in September. We will be having a series of workshops that cover a spectrum of things, everything from how do we put together, well, realizing that the need out there is education, that we, as a society, we are somewhat, and I would say in general, ignorant of what we're doing to our planet, and we really need to wake up. On the other hand, we are in parallel to that as we talk about becoming conscious elders and knowing that what does that mean? We can say we're doing that, but I'm I'm in the same boat as what Constance said earlier. We're elders in training, and so that's an education process. So we're going to be really focusing some on what is the education that we should be putting together. That's going to be one of the tracks that we have there. We have two activism groups right now. One of them's been at it for a while. That's really focused on legislation to, combat, if you will, climate change or attenuate that. We want our Congress to act. We really want those folks who are denying that we have a climate that is changing fast to get off that, and knowing that they're being influenced by the petroleum industry to do that, that they don't really know what they believe. We have another group that just started about December that's focused on social justice, and our initial learning there. Well, we're in a learning mode about what is, from a white person's point of view, what is racism and racial inequality, and what does it mean when we talk about white privilege? And so we're realizing how much we don't know, and so that we figure that if we're going to try to find some way to do something of value there, we need to get educated first, and so we've been at that. We're going to be starting a new action group next year that'll be focused on what we call regenerative sustainable living. How do we start thinking about, for each of us, wherever we live, how do we live more simple? Again, back to what Constance was referring to here. We don't need more stuff. We don't need to power over. We need to be empowered with each other. And so we're going to start that group. So there's going to be some startup action. Constance is going to be telling us about this foundations course, and she and another woman from the Bay Area, Ann Adams, are going to have a session on how to get elder circles and chapters started. And we see that we need to do this across America, because we're having people who are expressing interest from Maine to Hawaii. And we need to have these circles in place. And so the question is, how do you get those started? How do you enrich them, keep them going, and so that each person feels that they can engage in a meaningful way? So we have a lot of things we're going to cover on this gathering, and I'd be very happy to provide more information about the workshops that we'll be having, the plenary sessions, the night programs, all that kind of thing. And we're going to have fun together. You know, this can get pretty, if we look at all the stuff that's going on, this collapsing empire that Constance, again, mentioned earlier, it could get us all down because we're used to certain things like our government functioning the way they're supposed to, and they're failing us. So we have to have a spirit of enjoyment and look for the joy in life and the humor and the fun that we need to be doing and having, experiencing while we do our work. So that in a that's kind of a ramp, like, what we're going to do, but that's the intention.
Yeah, I understand that the gathering is from September 17th through the 21st, and it's being held in Burlingame Mercy Retreat Center.
Yeah, it's actually the 18th to the 21st. We're going to get together the afternoon of the 18th, that's a Sunday, and we will finish at noon on the equinox, the 21st.
Very good. And how can elders register if they're interested in attending?
We have a website for registering, and we have an email document that we can send to anyone who is interested in being with us. We have several open spots yet, although it's limited. And one thing, I can give you my email address, but otherwise, consciouselders.org, that website, you can go there and register, consciouselders.org.
Yeah, there's a events and registration page there.
Yes.
Okay. Constance, maybe you could tell us a little bit more about your work with Joanna Macy's work that reconnects and how that's pertinent to being an elder.
Oh, okay. To me, when I left Malton Marin Organic 3 years ago, I had the opportunity to do what I have been wanting to do in my deepest heart for years, which was do the work that reconnects full time. I started studying with Joanna Macy in 1994. And when I first met her, I went, she's my gal. And that the work just resonated so much with me because I had started out in environmental science. I ended up in theater, and I've been a Buddhist practitioner since high school. So it just wove together those three elements to me that just were the core of my life and brought practices for waking up and waking up in a way that honored your interconnection with all life. And dealt with the emotional side of what's happening to us on this planet right now. And so when I became involved with the Conscious Elders Network, I was it just was a great marriage. And John had done a workshop with Joanna Macy and really understood how the work that reconnects can be very foundational to growing a Conscious Elders Network community. So the work that reconnects is based on a spiral that starts with gratitude, and that all of our work in the world and our work as humans and our work as spiritual beings starts from gratitude, being grateful to the earth and to each other and for being alive. So the first phase of the work that reconnects is really tapping into that sense of gratitude and love for the earth. And Then the next phase is honoring our pain, and this is the sort of the key part to the work that gets overstepped by a lot of other work, is that if we believe, and this is what the role of being conscious is, that we are all intimately interconnected, all life on this planet, all humans, the water and us, the bees, the birds, all of it, we're all one. So that the suffering of the earth is also our suffering. And the suffering of refugees is our suffering. And the pain and rage of the black men on the streets being harassed is our rage too. So that, but we don't, it gets pathologized. It got me, you know, you're depressed or you've got unfinished business. Well, no, you know, the things are really bad out there and I'm going to be angry. And that's okay, because your anger is a reflection of your passion for justice, for your caring. Your grief is because you love. So the honoring our pain for the world section allows us our feelings, and then it opens up our love and our passion and our joy. Because in this culture, think about it, how many ways do we give ourselves to get distracted? Go to the movies, have a drink, have a video game, whatever. Don't feel the pain of what's going on. Anything but that. Have, you know, Prozacs. It's more depressed people, more people being prescribed with. Of course they're depressed, because what's happening on the planet is really depressing. But if we stuff that, then we don't have the joy and the life and the energy to do something about it. So that's a huge shift in the work that reconnects. And I think for working with elders who are seeing what's going on, it's like, oh, it's too much. I can't do anything about it. Shut down, turn away, play bingo, whatever. But to be able to go into that and then come out the other side, and I see it time and time and time and time again, people go into the fear of the grief, and they're coming out with so much energy to do something. And then seeing with new eyes, how is the next step of the spiral? How do we see ourselves as interconnected on this whole planet? How do we see the thousands and thousands and thousands of fabulous things that are happening on this earth? Paul Hawking calls it the blessed unrest, the great turning. Think of the Bioneers Conference and all the people doing so much great work all around the planet. So there is, Earth's immune system is kicking in. People are getting empowered. So starting to see that and seeing our interconnection with that, and that the whole planet is working towards more life, and we're part of that. So seeing with new eyes, and then the final stage of the work that reconnects is going forth. Okay, what's my role? How do I listen into what the earth and what life wants me to do? What's my role? How do I go forth into the world and help nurture more life? So that's sort of a summary of the work that reconnects. And it's very much the process of working with conscious elders to help them find their passion and their way for moving forward to protect and nurture more life on this planet. And it just fits in so well. We've been doing retreats. We have a day-long workshop coming up August 28th, Sunday, all day in San Geronimo Valley to explore the work that reconnects for the Conscious Elders Network. So people are interested in that. That's also on the Conscious Elders website.
Thank you, Constance. Kurt, would you like to tell us about the social justice work you're doing?
Well, partly it fits in with what Constance was saying. I was also affected by the work of Joanna early on. One of the areas, however, that I'm really engaged in at this point, living in Oakland, is supporting frontline communities that are actually taking the hit in terms of the disintegration of empire, taking the hit in terms of climate, taking the hit in terms of a militarized police, taking the hit in terms of reduced access to housing and living in food deserts and things like that. So for me, the work there is to be in to find a new kind of solidarity, a new kind of accountability to those folks, because I'm a white person, and to work and organize in white communities to be able to meet those needs for support and from the point of privilege. How that fits in with eldering is interesting, because I think that there's one of the things that's to go back to some of the exploration that had been going on in the Sebastopol community around this issue of unknowing, that we're really speaking about a place in which one becomes released from the stories that both have been inculcated in us by the culture and also the stories that we've elaborated on through the course of our lives. And it's a sense of finding some freedom from that, some liberation from that, so that I can actually turn and be fully open and accountable to people who really need not only support, but they need solidarity. They need accomplices. That's a new word that's evolving in the community, in the Movement for Black Lives, in terms of what we used to call allies, that what's needed is accomplices in the work to actually dismantle the organizations that are functioning out of privilege and that are abusing power. So part of it, what I'm saying here, I want to reiterate, is this issue of unknowing. This is a kind of a releasing of the identity of my whiteness that has given me so much privilege in this culture, and finding a way through that into a place where I can actually be available. And that's one of the things that I think is powerfully available to elders, that as we get into this period of our life, there's not only a cultural release, because you know we now have this thing called retirement, which of course the culture didn't have for so long, and so many communities don't have that. If you go to McDonald's and look in there and see how many elders are actually working in there, but this gosh, I just lost my thread there for a second.
It's actually okay, because I was thinking of jumping in there. So maybe I ask you a question
please
that's related
that.
To that, which is what I'm hearing is a lot of the people in the Elders Network have had a fairly comfortable life and have come to elderhood with the privilege that you're talking about. And so I wonder how the networks are incorporating people who aren't in that position, elders who, say, didn't benefit as much. And the first demographic that comes to mind to me are older single women who, right. you know, may not have the resources. So they may right. they may not be looking for more stuff, but they may still be struggling with economic security.
Yeah, well, I think that's an incredibly important question, because, in fact, there is an edge of this that's going on right now that actually is more privileged, more white, formally educated. And that's part of what I think some of our initial work needs to be, and I hope that that's part of what's going to happen at this conference, is that we're going to be able to actually explore some of those issues. Who's being left out? Who's being left out? Whose voice isn't being heard? Whose voice could inform us in a new way around what this is? If you're 65 years old and you have to work at McDonald's in order to be able to survive, you know, what's going on for you, and how can that be explored, and how can those folks be brought in, I think is a critical question. Yeah.
And Great. You're not going to be at the conference.
Say again?
And you're not going to be at the conference.
You are. Who's not?
People like that.
Oh, yes.
Don't have the means for the reason.
Yes.
I know. I'm going this year. I couldn't go the first time because there was a rule that barred me. The rule said the person had to be there the whole time. Well, I can't physically be anywhere for very long.
Yeah.
Except in my house, because it's set up for me. It meant I didn't have a voice, and what I represented as a disabled elder could not make an appearance.
Well, that's a great way to bring up so many of the other kinds of wisdom that are really important, right, to bring into your networks. Many opportunities for continuing to grow that way.
Yes, this is Bing Gong, co-host of Post Carbon Radio. In case you just tuned in, our topic today is aging and conscious elderhood. A roundtable discussion with Kurt Kuhlwald, a Unitarian Universalist community minister, Constance Washburn, who is connected with the and doing some organizing and introducing people to that work, also a facilitator of Joanna Macy's work that reconnects. And on the phone, we have John Sorensen, founder of the Conscious Elders Network, and David Lucky Goff in Sebastopol. I'd like to ask David, or Lucky, that you and Alexandra Hart started an elder salon in Sebastopol 6 years ago, and that which has been meeting monthly. And I was just wondering if you could tell tell our listeners what your experience has been from those meetings with elders.
Thank you for asking, Bean. And because you're asking, I'm going to try to give voice to something I think that is a little different from what I'm hearing from Sin and from Constance. One of the hallmarks, one of the things I'm most proud of with regard to the Elder Salon is that we've created a space where no flags, where there is no dominant ideology. Everybody comes with their own perspective and is able to maintain their perspective and offer it to the community at large, which has created a great opportunity for learning and a great opportunity for people to test out their favorite or most cherished theories and with each other. And community has actually evolved through our being different, not through our being alike. And that, I think, is an especial quality for the salon and a special way the community can be useful to elders. I think at this stage in life, what I've found is facilitating this group or any group of elders I've worked with has been like herding cats, because everybody seems to want to go their own way, needs to go their own way. What I've found over time, and it took me a while to unlearn my own arrogant ideas about how things should be, so I can actually be with what is there are more than enough paths into paradise for everyone. And if people are given a chance to be themselves in community, whatever themselves happens to be, it may be Christian, it may not, it may be Buddhist, it may not, it may be pagan, it may not, who knows. And there are lots of false strippers who tend to come to these kind of meetings. They all have in common, I think, a sense of being in relationship with something larger. So for 6 years, we've had the privilege of learning from old people what they know by virtue of their experience and of that being shared, so that people here are feeling fed by the experiences and learning of others. Our motto basically is, we are giving ourselves to each other. There's a lot of inner work, inner development that happens later in life that, by and large, is not covered by the kind of activism that has been talked about by especially the Zen folks. And in my experience, I've been working, I've been lucky enough to rub shoulders with people in their 90s and their 100s. G-Fest going demographic in our world are those who are really the old, the old. And it's interesting that their viewpoints are very different than the ones that are expressed by the young old. So there's something going on that needs to be incorporated in this whole process of eldering, because old elders are not the same as young elders by a long way. And so, you know, trying to represent elders as a whole means actually being much more versatile and inclusive than we are at the moment. And that's what the salon has taught me. I'm sure if you asked everyone in the salon, you'd get a bunch of different answers about what it has taught them. And that is part of the glory of the place, that there is a lot of opportunity. I think the learning of the future will be not our own learning through what the books and videos and things and experience we've had, but learning not only through those things, but through the experiences of others. I think there's going to be a vaster kind of consciousness that can evolve by virtue of learning how to experience and be with and inquire into the differences that we can take.
David, this is Karen. I have a follow-up question to a comment you made a moment ago about the difference between, and I'm going to probably say it wrong, but the very old elders in their 90s and 100 and the younger elders.
Mm-hmm.
What is your impression about the origin of that difference? Do you think that it is because people have had longer to live, or because they're closer to the end of their life? Or do you think there's something about the particular part of history that they lived through that gives them a different perspective? Or where do you think it comes from?
I think it's some combination of the first two things mentioned. The fact that they're old enough, they've had a variety of life experiences, and the incredible effects of facing death, especially for a long time. There's a kind of shift in consciousness that naturally is introduced by the recognition of death, of termination of life. It's very clarifying. And also, one of the big shifts I see is there is much more of movement inwards. So younger elders tend to be more focused on what they can do to change the world. Older elders seem to be more focused on what they can do to change themselves, to make this a better world. And I think that is an interesting difference, one that could be very useful.
John, would you like to weigh in on this?
I think that's a really good answer that Lucky just came on here. I'm by immersing myself in this phase of life, I'll say that, and knowing that you know, when I get questions about, well, am I an elder or not? What you know, this is a 48-year-old asking, can I be an elder too? And watching or just observing the focus of someone in their 50s, some people in the 50s versus those that are maybe late 70s, 80s, or have some reason to slow down because of their health or circumstances. There's definitely a progression that goes on In David, Bill Plotkin's Soul Craft and his Nature in the Human Soul, he talks about the two stages of elderhood, where the young one, he speaks of those in the younger phase as a grove of elders, people that are in elderhood who are working together for an outer cause or whatever, however you'd say that, as opposed to someone who is in the what we could might call moving into really old age, where they no longer have the energy or perhaps the interest in that. Maybe they're still interested, but they feel that's not their role anymore, and they are really thinking about what is it that they have left to do, and as Lucky says, how do they grow themselves and how they change themselves yet so that they are part of a better society as a result of that. So it's an exploration, and I think we all, we all have to come to that point where we see that we have to slow down, and we spend more time in contemplation. That's all part of it. And the other thing I would notice, too, is different people have different motives. And that when I first got into this, I really thought, oh, well, everybody ought to be activists. We need to be out in the streets. We need to be in the public square. And I've really changed my mind about that as I've really worked with people and understood where they're coming from. So there's a big learning that goes on with that. And what I do today, or when somebody brings that up, is I say, well, you know, if you think of the human body as of its many parts that all have to work together, but my leg muscle has a different function than my lungs, and each one of them is vital to the other. And that's how we have to see ourselves as a network, we can call ourselves that, or as an organization, or something in between, where we need to see the value of each other and understand that. And that's part of this learning that goes on as we explore how we go through this unknown thing that, or this phase of life that we've never had before. So, I think we're all in agreement with this whole idea.
Yeah, this is Kurt again. So one of the things that strikes me about that is being able to hold difference in community on the one hand, and knowing then and being in touch with the differences, the different directions that people will go. There's something that emerges fairly early on into the elder experience that I'm noticing and that we've talked about in Sebastopol, and that is the capacity to hold a paradoxical consciousness. Obviously, if you've been around a long time and you've seen a lot of different human types, you've seen a lot of different human organizations, you've seen various kinds of problems and problem solving, you're going to have an expanded capacity to look into any situation and bring those particular things to bear. However, I'm also aware that there's something else going on even further internally around that. It's not just an accumulation of experience that allows me to have that vision. It is an actual expansion in my own inner capacity to hold on to a wider picture. There's some deepening of consciousness. And I think that it's interesting when you think of older elders, the centenarians and the people in their 90s and late 80s, even in early 80s, that are really really moving into this space of being able to tap into this deeper level of their presence in the world, their being in the world, their simply being in the world. So that's a piece I just wanted to lift up here. I think this piece around paradoxical consciousness has been quite a quite a revelation for me and something that I'm really relishing. Certainly that helps when you want to be a mentor. You know, if you can hold different things for a person so they've got more options than just the two that they think they've got or the one they think they have. Mm. But anyway, so.
Thank you. I think it was last year, might have been the year before, I did a 12-day vision fast in Death Valley and out in the desert asking, you know, what is my role now as an elder and who am I and how can I be? And, you know, just out there with a rattle going, okay, what? And what came was that. What came was to be able to hold the joy and the grief at the same time, to be able to hold the fear and the courage at the same time, to be able to hold those two sides of things and not feel like they're separate. So as an elder, being able to model that. And another thing that came to me when we were talking about consciousness, and one of the goals of the Conscious Elder Network is to build the consciousness of our interconnection. That's why our logo is the Indra's Net, with the story of God Indra, who had a craftsman made this net that he sent out all over the universe. And at every place the threads cross, there's a jewel. And every jewel reflects every other jewel in the whole web so that nothing can happen to one being that doesn't affect another. So we're in this web, and it's the understanding of that and acting from that place of knowing. And you were talking about that place of knowing and being, of knowing that you are in that web. You are interconnected. There's no separation. And acting from that place, so it's not me versus you. It's us together working for a solution. It's not right versus wrong. It's us working together to foster more life. And it's that shift in consciousness that is so crucial, because otherwise we're going to go out there and create the same old problems all over again, which tends to be what we do over and over. And, you know, you go back to that Einstein's quote, you can't solve a problem from the same consciousness that created it. So we have to shift the consciousness in order to solve the problems that the consciousness of separation has created. So we have to come at the problem from a consciousness of oneness, a consciousness of unity, in order to be able to move forward in ways that will foster life.
This is KWMR, and you just heard the voice of Constance Washburn. This is Post Carbon Radio, and we're doing a two-hour special today with a number of guests that Bing has arranged to bring together to talk about conscious elderhood. And Constance, you're mentioning, and Kurt as well, Kurt Kowal spoke before Constance, about the being able to hold a two paradoxical things in your mind at once, and at the same time as you're letting go of some things, still, you know, holding on to others. It made me think of the title of this new film by Josh Fox, and I have not seen it, and I'd love to know if anyone on this panel has seen How to Let Go of the World and Love All the Things Climate Can't Change by Josh Fox. Has anybody seen that film?
No.
Sounds great, though.
Yeah. Okay. All right. I also just want to share with listeners that we have had a little brown butterfly fluttering about the studio during this entire panel, and that never has that ever happened, Bing, in 8 years?
No.
Yeah. Okay. Something's going on.
Transformation. Yeah. Transformation. One of the things that came to me from your question is, Joanna has this wonderful little video on uncertainty. And I think that's one of the places we sit, is in uncertainty right now. Will the planet survive or will it not? Will the human race survive or will it not? And being able to rest in that uncertainty is the most powerful place to be. Because if you knew it was all going to be okay, what would you do? It's all going to be okay. I don't have to do anything. And if you knew it was all going to hell in a handbasket and there wasn't a chance in hell that we were going to survive, you say, well, there's nothing I can do. Why bother? So sitting in that place of uncertainty, of not knowing, is where our senses all light up. and our juices start to flow, and we go, oh, okay. So that's a very much that place of sitting in the balance of not knowing.
I'd like to ask Lucky Goff. You write The Slow Lane, and one of your pieces was called Integral Activism. Could you tell us a little bit about that? I think you also talked about cultivating paradoxical thinking in that.
Yes, that's correct. So, you know, as I was listening to Constance speaking about this, I feel very sympathetic to what you're saying, Constance. I noted my bones and thus am highly moved by it. But I'm learning through facilitating this, Cindy, and to my own looking at development, that it's really important that people be able to develop themselves. And there's something going on. I mean, when Kurt was talking about his change of consciousness, even when you were talking about yours, there's a change of consciousness that comes about just through any efforts on our part, but just through aging, through life itself. And I think that is important. And I agree that what Joanna has to say about uncertainty is really important. I think it's true that we've come to this place in life. We're one of the first generations who are facing the realization that we, our species, has the power now to end complex life on this planet. Never before has any human being had to deal with that. But we're learning as we're going how to deal with the realization that we have outgrown our own systems for self-government. We've actually created a mess for ourselves, a really difficult one. It's a great initiatory ordeal. And we don't know if we're going to make it there, which I think is appropriate. I think the not knowing, the uncertainty, the hopelessness are actually important parts of our liberating a certain kind of consciousness that only can come when those conditions prevail. And we've cooked a mighty terrible broth for those conditions to prevail. And I think the heart and soul of integral activism, as I see it, is usually about going in, recognizing the world we live in, and going in and seeing if there's within ourselves a place where we actually can uniquely respond to the circumstances we find ourselves within. So, yeah, there are certain elements that I think are really important. For instance, the first one is uprooting internalized oppression. We need to free ourselves of all the thought forms, all of the assumptions that we've made about ourselves, about what we live in, about our neighbors, in order to actually interact with them in a fresh and new way. There is a kind of innocence that children have and that old people have. It's a different kind of innocence than the old because there's so much life experience behind us. We have to free ourselves from and can free ourselves from. And when we do, I think there's a kind of opportunity to interact in the world in a very different way. And that can change the whole game. So I won't say more because There is actually a lot that could be said about NGO activism. But the most important point is the idea that if one inside oneself can align oneself with the larger processes of life, like Jonda speaks so eloquently about, then there is an opportunity, I think, to actually begin to make that change, if not locally, larger. And, you know, it's something that serves us all. That's all.
John, would you like to follow up on that?
I've got my mute on here. I'm just dwelling in what Lucky has to say here, and I really don't have anything off right hand. I think I'll pass on your question for that for right now and pick up later.
This is Karen. I'm interested in anyone who wants to tell a personal story about, you know, for you in particular, how transformations have happened, how you've settled more into accepting paradox. You know, were there any moments or stories you can tell to illustrate some of the general processes you've been discussing this hour?
Yeah, this is Kurt. I have an experience. It's a little tangential to paradox, but actually it does include it. And that is that one of the things that I've noticed shifting in me is the fact that my insight, my capacity to see into my own personal history and my own personal experience and my own patterns, not only on today's level, but throughout my life, and that's one of the advantages of being an elder, is being able to look back over that vista of one's entire life, that my capacity to pinpoint those patterns and see them, see how they're operating and whether they're really serving me and whether they're serving life or not, has actually been deeply increased. And there's a paradox in that, because I didn't do anything to make that happen. Now, I've done a lot of things in my life. I mean, I've been in therapy, I've been in groups, I've been in, you know, I've meditated, et cetera. But this feels, I think Lucky alluded to it earlier, or someone did, the whole idea, the word that came to me early on about this is it was unbidden. Now, I didn't do anything to make this insight intensify, but it just has. One of the things about it is that not only do I see better, but in the seeing of it, in the way that I'm able now to see it, there's actually some healing that occurs in it. It's like I feel it, the power of its negative grip on me dissolve, and a capacity to shift into something bigger and new and freer and more into a domain of unknowing about how should I behave in these circumstances, what's going to happen next, like that. So anyway, so that's a personal thing that's been very important to me lately.
I was wondering, and it does relate in my mind to paradox, I was wondering whether it was partly sort of this, maybe it's a natural evolution, maybe it's a product of the work that you've done, as you mentioned, but the development of sort of an observer self that looks at you, not just looks mm-hmm. back on your life, but as you said, looks at your patterns and is able mm-hmm. to sort of be dispassionate about that. And as you mm-hmm. said, ask these questions, is this serving me? Is this serving life? Mm-hmm. And then what that makes me wonder is, was there a transition? Did you have to look at those things that you didn't like or that weren't working? Was there guilt? Did you have to sort of forgive yourself for something that wasn't right, or did it just sort of, you found yourself able to let it go?
Well, a little bit of all of that, I think. There is, as you use the word dispassionate, partly there's a certain quality of dispassionateness about it. That is that I'm seeing it. It's kind of a philosophical view of it. But it's much more vital and real than that. I mean, it's not cognitive. It's not only cognitive. It's something that really is of the heart as well. And there is both a release. And there's also, I think that's another point that we've often made in our conversations together, that there's a new level of compassion, self-compassion, that comes into play here. You know, it's like I can say, oh, wow, you know, that was tough. It's been tough living that pattern. It's really been tough. But I don't have to do it anymore. And so my capacity to choose is really quite enhanced in all of this.
Could you start that again? I think we had a little problem with your phone line.
Go ahead, Lucky. Are you there, Lucky?
Yeah, I think I'm not sure what's happening, but it sounds like we're having a little trouble hearing you, but we want to hear you. Constance, did you have a comment while he's...
Yeah, one of the things that, as with Kurt, that I am finding as I move towards elderhood, that I am a lot more forgiving of myself. And, you know, that judging sledgehammer doesn't quite come so frequently. And that makes me a lot more compassionate to others as well. That I can be a lot more forgiving of others' patterns and behaviors that I may not agree with. So that sort of comes back to that role of elder as being mediator, of bringing things together, of being able to see both sides and be compassionate to what's going on so we're not continuing the fight. Which is, you know, even as we've had an environment, and I've been involved in the environmental movement since I was in high school in 1968 and 69. And, you know, it was battle mode. You know, we're going to fight the bad guys. And, you know, that hasn't worked because it's just setting up more us and them. So the idea of bringing our compassion to all parties, ourselves included, allows for the safety, in a way, for that which is needed, that which is unknown, that which is coming from the mystery to come forward. And that's where the new solutions are going to come from. But we have to allow it to happen and allow the space that is safe for that to happen in, which tends not to have too much judgment and shoulds in it.
So that was Constance Washburn. This is KWMR Post Carbon Radio, and we'd
okay. Again, you're listening to Post Carbon Radio, and we're talking about conscious elderhood. I'm just curious: is Lucky? Are you on the line?
I'm on the line. Can you hear me now?
Yes. I think you were going to say something and got cut off.
I wanted to say it. Well, I've been thinking as we are talking about this thing about development. There is something that happens late in life that changes most people's consciousness. A lot of developmental research has gone into this, and it appears that older people are, by and large, more happy, less reactive, and more relational, more in the moment, more paradoxically aware. There are a host of things like that that are going on. They have a different sense of time. And all of that, I mean, part of that can be attributed to brain development. There's an interesting phenomenon that as we're losing short-term memory, which is a natural process, there is another natural process that's happening in older brains, and that is the area, region of the brain which connects the right hemisphere and the left hemisphere. That region is called the corpus callosum. It's actually thickening. So one is gaining the ability to integrate both right and left hemispheres, right and left ways of thinking and being, which is interesting because I think it goes along with the idea of developing a kind of awareness that is much more capable of integrating opposites, more paradoxical kind of awareness. And I think it's all coming from the fact that life seems to need a more complex organism at this moment.
I'd like to ask how that feels. How does it feel to experience that?
Well, it's exciting, I can tell you that. Okay. It's humbling, too. There's a whole bunch of elements to it. Being aware of how horrible the world is and how miraculous it is at the same time is very sobering.
So when you said that the life on Earth needs a different kind of organism, or humans need a different way of functioning, and I've been doing a lot of reading and looking into networks and who are the Conscious Elders Network, and what does being a network mean? And Margaret Wheatley has written a lot on this topic, and I don't have the quote in front of me, but the idea is that living systems on Earth, the only form of life that works is networks. I mean, you think of a forest as a network. All the tree roots are networked. All the different plants and animals in the thing are in the forest are networked.
Embedded everything is and everything else.
And how embedded, and to be able to function as a network means really allowing yourself to be embedded in the living system, because if you're not, you're toast. So we have to find our way as a network in the greater living system of the Earth. And the species who have been around for a long time have figured out how to do that. We're a baby species.
Into one of the topics I'm most passionate about, community. Because, right, human community has been the intermediary throughout history of the connection between the individual and the cosmos. We're all embedded in a larger cosmos. And it's through our relationships with each other and the differences we embody, we begin to grasp more and more of the cosmos. So when people, as they do in this culture, tend to isolate themselves through a host of means, they lose the larger connections that are really important. And through interacting with those difficult strangers, those others that we're surrounded by, we actually gain more and more awareness about who we are and where we are.
I wanted to ask John, I heard when you were being interviewed by Lucky on Growing an Elder Culture, I don't know, a couple years ago, I heard the mention of sacred activism. It's, I think, a term that Lawrence Harvey used. Can you say a little bit about that?
Yeah, thank you for that one. This Andrew Harvey coined that expression, and let's see, I usually have it right on the top of my desktop here. I'm going to read it to you, and then I'll talk about it. What Andrew Harvey has defined as sacred activism, it's a statement that goes like this: a spirituality that is only private and self-absorbed, one devoid of an authentic political and social consciousness, does little to halt the suicidal juggernaut of history. On the other hand, an activism that is not purified by profound spiritual and psychological self-awareness and rooted in divine truth, wisdom, and compassion will only perpetuate the problem it is trying to solve, however righteous its intentions. When, however, the deepest and most grounded spiritual vision is married to a practical and pragmatic drive to transform all existing political, economic, and social institutions, a holy force, the power of wisdom and love in action, is born. This is defined as sacred activism. And I read this, and as several of us have, and all of us had this thing of saying, this thing rings so true, that we each need to be working on our inner beings, our own intention to grow in consciousness while we do our outer activism. And it really is it's a call to do both, to be involved in the world, to be out there making a difference, however that might manifest for each one of us, but at the same time taking care of our inner beings and working on that. So I put it right on top of my my monitor here and remind myself every once in a while, have I been doing my inner work here? You know, I get upset with something or other, and I get myself saying, you know, my gosh, I'm posing enemies out there. That's not what this is about, you know, and get myself back on course here. So I hope I've answered your question here. That's what, to me, sacred activism is.
Thank you, John.
You know, I think of examples of people like Martin Luther King and Gandhi and Mother Teresa and the Dalai Lama. I mean, they're spiritual beings, but they're being out there in the world taking that into a way that's really benefiting beings.
I have a question. The word isolation came up a few minutes ago about getting older in this country. And at the same time, there's a solitude when you're practicing a meditative practice. So does anyone want to comment on the balance between solitude and being in groups like these networks, and how that balance helps you do both the spiritual and the political?
Yes, I do.
Go ahead, Mike.
One of the practices under the idea of integral activism, actually under the idea of integral activism, is practicing community. Immersing oneself in the ever formulating, gritty circumstance of relating to others. That changes our outlook. It holds us accountable. It introduces us to reality, and we never done ourselves. So I think actually rubbing shoulders with others, and I mean people that are really different, that actually isn't very hard to do, introduces us to a host of challenges, all of which require us to grow ourselves to handle. So if one is going to practice social justice or environmental justice, then it needs to be something that can be informed by interactions with others. Because depending on we're all embedded. We have an environment around us at all times.
John, I think we're losing your phone connection again.
Is that John or Lucky?
I'm sorry. Excuse me, Lucky. Sorry, we were losing our phone. Let's give you the mic again just to see if it's cleared up. Do you want to finish what you were saying?
Yeah.
Let's go ahead and try.
I just want to repeat the last sentence. We're all embedded in an environment, a social and natural environment that is immediately present wherever we are, and if we can act and from each other condiment as well in that context. We can do the same in larger and larger venues. So the people irritating neighbor, the spouse gets under your skin, the friend who sometimes seems sort of out to lunch, those are all people that can help. They're all experiences that can alter our awareness. And if we can develop a kind of looking forward to that, so to say, which I see more and more with the elders who really, really are alive with the desire to learn, to use this opportunity, this blessed opportunity that we have, then amazing things happen. There's amazing creativity available to be unleashed in we older people. And if we could just learn to love each other and love ourselves as fully as the opportunity allows, then that creativity is unleashed. And everybody in the world benefits by that.
Thanks for that, Lucky. I want to go to something, too, that I think underlies that we talked about a little bit earlier. We mentioned it and we didn't elaborate on it much. And that is this whole idea, and I think Constance mentioned it at one point, and we've all kind of went around it, that's the idea that the immune system of the Earth is activated at this point. And that concept, the idea that somehow we are so integral a part of this planet, we are in fact the complete product of the systems of this planet, and that something is going on in elders that's being activated as a response to what's happening in terms of the damage to the planet and to its ecosystems at this point. That concept, you know, which doesn't, I know, is a difficult one for many in the scientific community to entertain, however, is one that I think bears a whole lot of contemplation, because if, in fact, we are really being stimulated by these forces that are beyond us in that way, that are actually coming through us, it's something we really need to pay attention to. And I feel very heartened by the idea that some of the experiences that I'm having as an elder actually are the product of these forces moving at a deeper and more healing level. It's really quite humbling. Anyway, I just wanted to lift it up.
Good job of summarizing the forces at work here. I just want to celebrate the fact that you were able to say that, because that is, I think, a very fundamental thing that needs to be heard. And I would add, would change the word contemplation to, there is a way that people can experientially know for themselves. And it doesn't mean just going in. It means going in connection with going out. So all of these relationships that I mentioned earlier, they all convey an experiential way of grasping what you're talking about.
Well, and certainly it does emphasize the need for being in community, where people are actually communicating on a kind of an even level, you know, where we're able to dialogue in a way that actually teases this stuff out and feel it and experience it and know it in relationship to one another. That's a very strong need, and
That's one of the primary foci of the Conscious Elders Network upcoming retreat gathering, is really looking at how do we communicate with each other, how do we act as a sacred community. One of the things that Thich Nhat Hanh said was that, you know, the next savior isn't going to be an individual, it's going to be an awakened community, and that we as a communities coming together consciously and to move ourselves to the next level is what's going to be effective. And I had a teacher many, many years ago who said, you know, the universe is giving you every single moment exactly what you need to wake up, including that person who just cut in front of you, or the person who's making you really angry, or you know, political candidates that make you really upset. It's all part of what is working to wake us all up.
John Sorensen, I'd like to give another opportunity to announce the national gathering that's happening September 18th through the 21st at Mercy Center Burlingame.
Yes, thank you. Yes, that we are having our Conscious Elders Network. It's our second national gathering. It's going to be from Sunday afternoon, September 18th, through noon on September 21st at the Mercy Center in Burlingame, California. Anyone who is out there that might be interested, we would most welcome you, and you can sign up on our website. That is ConsciousElders.org, www.ConsciousElders.org. We would very much welcome everyone who has an interest in being part of an elders movement to make a difference in the world. So
and
thank you for
an elder in training.
That opportunity.
And John, is that event wheelchair accessible?
Yes, it is. It certainly is.
It best be because I'm in a wheelchair. And I'm hoping to be there for at least a portion of it.
Great. And there's an event coming up on Sunday, August 28th, at the San Geronimo Valley Community Center from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. called Elders Gathering for the Earth. The workshop, using the work that reconnects for the Conscious Elders Network. So if you're interested in learning about the Conscious Elders Network and experiencing some of the kinds of processes and work that we do together, you could come for that day. And you can register at ConsciousElders.org.
Well,
can I make a concluding remark, too? So this is lucky. I just want to thank you, Kurt, as one person who is a member of SEN. I want to congratulate you for using the word ageist. We didn't talk about that, but I think we could put this into our document.
So that was, I'm just going to repeat that because we had a little telephone problem. That was Lucky saying thank you for using the word ageist. Right? Okay.
Yeah.
The fact that we could have spent the whole 2 hours talking about that.
Correct. Oh, so, speaking about ageism, I just ran across a great website called changingaging.org. It features Dr. Bill Thomas. He's a gerontologist or a physician who works with elderly people, and he has a TED Talk that's about 15 minutes long that really everybody should listen to. Anyway, I'd like to also announce some events happening in West Marin, elder events. Elizabeth Rivers will facilitate a book study group on The Activist Tao Te Ching by William Martin in September, and she also there is other elder events that she has in the Point Reyes Community Presbyterian Church. Elizabeth and Debbie Weisenberg co-facilitate a class called Making Friends with Death. And in Bolinas, There is a monthly elder and intergenerational group that gathers around a fire circle at Commonweal Garden. And so if you want more information about any of this Conscious Elder Network gathering or West Marin Elder events, please contact me at 415-766-1439 or bingong at sonic.net. And I just want to say that you can listen to all our post-carbon programs archived at wmpostcarbon.com. And Constance, do you have something you
want? I just wanted to read a little closing quote from the sages Tao Te Ching. The sage does not retire from life. The sage retires from unhappiness. Enjoy the moments given you. Love the people around you. Live the life offered you.
Thank you. And I just want to thank all our guests for taking the time to join us today. Constance Washburn, Kurt Kuvald, John Sorensen, and David Lucky Golf. Thank you again.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
And that ends this episode of Post Carbon Radio. Join us again on the second and fourth Mondays at 1 p.m.
I'm trying to spread the word about this immense issue, but I find it absurd why so many people are confused. Some people don't understand the weight of this problem. Act now before it gets out of hand, cause Earth is calling. I was 10 years old, exposed to it. The inconvenient truth really made me concerned how it was going to affect the youth. The temp is still rising from the pollution we produce. We need to start striving for a solution to reduce. When we burn fossil fuels like coal and gasoline, we're using dirty energies when we should be using clean. When we burn, we're adding to the greenhouse effect. CO2, CH4, and N2O collect in our atmosphere. They remain up there for years and years, absorbing sun rays that come near. We need to persevere, cause this makes our planet's temp rise fast. So why can't we find a way to cut back on our greenhouse gas?
We have waited too long. Act now before the moment's gone. The situation's tough, but stay strong until we see the dawn.
The climate's on my mind. The climate's on my mind. Climate's on my mind, the climate's on my mind, the climate's on my mind, the climate.